it's the New Year's Eve episode. Man, last week too, Dave, we were Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
So another holiday episode.
Another holiday episode for the folks that aren't pre-drinking for tonight.
Well, we talked about it a second ago. We got a drinking game. If
yes.
I say in all reality, absolutely, or 100%, people listening have to take a shot.
Yes, and we will also take a shot here in the studio.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect's another
Done.
One. So
dang it.
Take a shot, folks.
Starting the show off with a shot.
Yeah, it's the New Year's Eve episode of Nevada Backcountry as the year comes to a close. First and foremost, I'd like to thank the show's sponsors, Truck Envy, Legacy Sports International, Out West Buildings, and Hunting House Archery Center. So go patronize the folks that bring you this content. They were good enough to step up to the plate, sponsor the show, and I can say that I have been a patron of every single one of those places, with the exception of Out West Buildings. I'm sorry, Irvin, we're still kind of penciling things out in the backyard. So at some point, Out West Buildings
yep.
will be doing something in my backyard. Sincere thanks to our sponsors. Now, this is going to be, what do we want to call this, Dave? The philosophical rabbit hole episode?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, yeah. That's,
okay.
That's actually a good one. The rabbit hole episode.
We'll talk legitimate, like, archery stuff. We'll do stabilizers. We'll talk about new bow, new setup.
Yeah.
But before we do that, let's end the year on kind of a, philosophical is the only word I can come up with.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a very controversial topic. What constitutes organic meat?
And this ties into kind of the why hunt.
Yeah,
concept.
Exactly. The why hunt or the benefits of a successful harvest, health-wise. There's a lot of stuff out there on the internet. You have a lot of folks that deem themselves as experts with organic. Back when organics first started coming out, that was probably like the high point for organics, because that was before the federal government and FDA got involved with determining what is considered organic.
So when would that have been? Like the 80s?
Oh,
70s? Geez. Late 70s and 80s?
I don't know. I thought it was like early 2000s myself.
Oh,
when all
oh.
the, you know, when everything started coming out like organic, like, oh, hey, I buy only free-range chicken eggs, or
gotcha,
I only
gotcha.
Buy this and that. I don't think the government had any like true regulations on it.
You could just
then.
Call it whatever you wanted.
Yeah. I mean,
see, and I, so here's my bias coming in, or not bias, but here's my life experience is, both of my folks were very into the eat healthy thing. So when
healthy.
I was a kid, we would go to co-ops.
Oh, yeah.
Back before you had like health food stores, they were co-ops.
Yeah.
So we would go, and I remember the label organic on stuff as a kid. So that's why I guessed.
Oh, yeah.
The time frame I did.
Yeah, that could be it. I mean, I just remember kind of like really coming to a head early 2000s. So as this stuff started coming out, federal government got involved and started putting rules and regulations to what you can deem as truly organic. Like, I found a few things online, and this is under the USDA organic website. And this is right off of their page. It says, like other organic products, organic livestock must be produced without genetic engineering. Totally
okay.
agree. Ionized radiation-free. Don't know what that is.
Not a clue.
And must be free of sewage sludge.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer to hold the sewage sludge with my meat.
Me
but
too. It gives it the meat kind of like a poopy flavor.
Okay, let's go genetically modified real quick. I'm going to blow past the poopy meat. And what constitutes, and here would be my argument with this whole concept, is everything unless it is a wild animal, to some extent or another, if it's domesticated, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's been bred for certain characteristics, whatever those characteristics are. So where do they draw the line? Like,
That is a good question.
You know what I mean?
It really doesn't go into that definition. I know some of the research I've done, there are certain animals like chickens,
right,
pigs, goats. Some of them have genetic modifications to them. You know, like the 30s and 40s and probably up into like the 60s. A chicken
mm-hmm.
took about 90 days-ish, if I remember correctly, 85 to 90 days for it to be relatively a mature chicken.
For like a meat bird?
Like a meat bird.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like yeah, a meat okay.
Bird. Well, today a chicken goes from coming out of the egg to being butchered in 43 days.
So we've cut it almost, yeah,
we've
in
cut
half.
It in half. So there's something there. I mean, it's not like, hey, let's just feed it more. It's there's right, something right, right, going right. on there. And that's the genetic modification is yeah. what I'm assuming. I don't know. Don't quote
goofing
me on
with
that,
its DNA and all that. Okay.
Something's yeah. going on in, you know, incorporating hormones or something to it. But going back to the genetic modification, ionized radiation and sewage sludge.
Yeah.
Don't know where that came from. I guess I never really took that much consideration or...
If you think about the sewage thing, yeah, it would scare
me.
What,
ionized radiation?
Yeah, I got to keep... I'm hopping over that because I don't know...
I don't know. I tried researching that a little bit more and it was kind of coming up blank. So maybe stay tuned on that one.
The sewage thing. So follow me on this. It doesn't specify like human sewage.
No.
So could it be like the, you know, the mass farm things where cows are standing in 6 inches of their own
yeah,
filth?
Yeah, so I have a feeling it has to do with them keeping the pens clean
okay.
at a more regular basis so they're not sitting in it or laying in it or,
right.
you know, eating it and what have you. So I'm assuming that's what I kind of got out of that. So that was like the initial definition of organic livestock. Then it goes into, for organics, they cannot have, there's a parts per million of drugs that can be in their system. So no matter what, they're going to be vaccinated. So
oh,
they're
right,
going to
right.
have a bunch of chemicals within them for vaccinations.
Okay.
That they can do that and they're still considered organic. They can also have pain medications provided to them, deworming drugs, drugs to maintain their health and stature so that they're still standing up and not having to be dragged to the meat locker. They can be provided with pain medications. There can't be any signs of growth hormones within the meat. But they're still getting tons of vaccinations. But then we can get into the chickens. So
okay.
this is one that I thought was really interesting. You go to the store and they've got the free-range chicken breasts. And
oh, the free-range thing.
On the packaging, they show a bunch of chickens out in this big open meadow. And people have to understand that these chickens, some of these ranches have like 100,000 chickens, 200,000
oh, yeah.
chickens plus. They're not free-ranging anywhere. Could you imagine trying to herd 200,000 or 300,000 chickens into a barn?
So, we have a hard enough time with... I think at one point we were up almost 30 of them in our backyard,
yeah.
and we had a hard enough time with those.
Right. So to be considered free range, they go from a 12 by 12, 12 inch by 12 inch containment area.
Per bird.
Per bird.
Okay.
To 18 by 18 inches. And since they're pretty much contained in barns, because you can't let that many chickens like free range anywhere.
Right, right.
They have to be provided with 10 minutes a day of natural sunlight. So basically these barns have been modified. Yeah, open big shutter doors.
Okay.
And open it up, allow them their 10, 15 minutes of natural sunlight a day.
Yeah.
And then shut them back down.
Suddenly it's free range. Yeah,
and then all of a sudden they can categorize that as free range organic chicken.
So it's not the idyllic, you know, it looks like a Monet painting or something.
Right.
Like them out right. walking through this 1,000-acre pasture.
Right.
It's an 18 by 18 cube is
correct.
What it is.
Yeah.
yeah.
There's several pages of information that I've been going through. It's really opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. Like,
hold that thought, because when we come back.
And compare game meat.
Bingo.
To beef and their nutritional values.
Absolutely. Don't go anywhere, everybody. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Right before we went to break there, you were starting to go into the benefits of game meat and why we're having this discussion. I'm going to use a real world example. I'm going to be a little bit vague about this because I don't want to offend anybody, but I know some people, everything they eat is very processed. Everything is store-bought meat and they struggle with their weight and have taken to taking some of these, the latest, greatest hip diabetes medication that you lose fat on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking
about? Yeah, I know what you're talking about,
All right, I don't want to say the name of it. Yeah. So they're doing that and yet not changing dietary habits. And they look at me like I'm a crazy person because I eat a lot of red meat.
Yeah.
But it's moose, elk, deer. Yeah. So they look at the way I eat and think that what I am consuming is the same thing they are consuming, when no matter how many times I have the discussion with them, it's apples to oranges.
Oh, 100%.
Yep. And you have the actual numbers.
Take a shot.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Let me take a shot.
No, you're right. I mean, processed meats has been well documented as really bad for you. The processed meats, processed breads, processed foods in general, because of all of the preservatives and all of the chemicals and binders and everything else that go into them to so that they can have a shelf life of, you know,
however
it is, 6 months or whatever. In the United States, a lot of the stuff that is used in the United States is actually illegal in other countries.
Seriously?
Yeah, they do not allow some of the binders we use and some of the food processing guidelines that we use here in the States, they're not allowed. So, but we'll get back into the meat here. So I do encourage everyone to get online, research yourself. This is merely mine and Henry's kind of take on what we've read.
Yeah, some of the nutritional stuff.
Yeah, some of the nutritional stuff. A lot of people really bag on hunters because their big thing is, why go kill an animal when you can just go to the store and buy it?
My nephew one time told me that it was safer. Store-bought meat.
Is safer?
Is safer.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll just leave that one there. I'll just set that
after
right.
We just I'll got just, done talking yeah. about the allowable amounts of sewage in your factory farm.
And the ionized radiation.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'll just set that.
That was, yeah. That there's a disconnect there. And that's, I have very low tolerance for that mindset. Yeah,
maybe he means, you know, you don't have to take the risk of being in the mountains and getting lost or
driving. Yeah.
So you have a higher probability of maybe an accident, God forbid, you know? So he's thinking, this Safeway is just right there. So you just go there and pick up your meat.
It's wrapped in cellophane. It's clean.
Safer.
Yeah.
It's safer. So maybe he was coming at it in a different approach.
Yeah.
I doubt it.
Go with the nutritional facts.
Yeah. So nutritional facts. If you want to get into good calories, protein, and actually good fats and lower amounts of fats, as well as omega-3s, the good cholesterol that a lot of us need, because a lot of us probably have higher bad cholesterol amounts. So,
do you know which is which? HDL and LDL?
LDL. I think LDL is the good stuff.
The good stuff. Okay.
I have a 50-50 chance of having that right. If we get into this, I'm going to go off of like a standard elk. And this is off of a 3.5 ounce, not trimmed, fat remaining steak.
Okay, like a little medallion, basically.
Like a small medallion. So in an elk medallion, you have 137 calories, 25 grams of protein, and 0.9 grams of fat.
Okay.
In a standard grade beef steak of that same description, you have 268 calories, 12 grams of protein, and 4.7 grams of fat.
Whoa. So basically 400% more fat.
Half the protein. And twice the calories.
Okay.
So remember that for beef. So then you get into other animals like white-tailed deer, mule deer, and moose are all sitting in the white-tailed deer is the highest at 149 calories. Moose is the lowest at 130.
Okay.
And they're all three of those animals are sitting at the 26 to 28 grams of protein, and moose is 0.5 grams of fat. Mule deer and whitetail deer sit at like 1.4 grams of fat. Okay. So that's why when people say, you know, you got to cook the game meat totally different than you do.
Yeah, there's not as much fat in it.
There's not as much fat, and it's going to cook a lot quicker.
Right, right.
Fat acts as an insulator, so if there's not that much fat, it's going to cook pretty quick.
Yeah, very good point. Okay. So,
and not only that, but all of these, the game meats, have three times the omega-3s than beef, chicken, and pork, store-bought or farm-raised.
Right.
Three times less of the bad cholesterol, two times more of the good cholesterol within their fat. Game meat across the board is 2.3% fat total.
Okay.
Where your domestic meat, cow, chicken, and pork has on average 30.7% fat.
Oh. People in my family tree that look at me as a crazy person for eating red meat three times a week maybe, it's the moose roast I'm pulling out of the freezer is not the same as the T-bone they're picking up from Raley's.
No, not at all. And another thing with just standard store-bought meat, you know, cow, chicken, and pork, domestic meat on average can have 20 to 30 different hormones and antibiotics in the meat.
Yeah.
Where game meat has zero.
Zilch. Yeah.
Zero. If you've ever taken a piece of elk, ground buffalo, ground deer.
Yeah.
And, you know, because some folks like to grind their meat and throw in pork fat or beef fat and stuff like that. That's, you're kind of defeating the purpose in a way, because those fats are what hold a lot of the stuff that we're trying to avoid.
Oh, okay.
It's held in the fat.
Oh, I am guilty of that, because I do mix in some beef fat.
Yeah.
With my ground.
Yeah. So like sometimes what I'll do is I'll shave the fat that's already on the animal that I'm carving away.
Smart.
And I'll throw that in the big bucket for my grinding.
Smart.
And I'll use that. But their meat, when you stick it up against an 85% ground beef,
that's dark.
It is dark red. Crazy dark red. Big difference. So those are things that people sometimes don't think about when they're buying it, or they're looking at somebody who hunts and harvests their own animals as oh my God, you're just a bunch of horrible people. Just go to the store and get it. Well, this is the biggest reason that I hunt right here, because I don't want all that garbage in the food that I'm consuming. I just don't. I mean, I don't know what that animal's been through or how many times it had to be injected because it may have been ill with the organic. So if you're going like true organic and you're paying that price, which is absurd amounts of money.
Oh, yeah.
So,
Well, I don't want to make it a money argument, because Lord knows the amount of gas. Holy smokes, if I had to add up per pound what most of the game meat costs, so, buddy, well, I'd be upside down.
Well, no, not necessarily. So I actually did that. On one of our last hunts when we went and harvested a buffalo.
So drop some hot knowledge on me.
So I took into account, because I'm kind of a numbers nerd.
Okay.
So I calculated and I kept all the receipts, and I calculated our fuel, our hotel stay prior to getting to camp, all of our food, the cost of the hunt, the whole bit. Now, granted, we harvested a buffalo.
Yeah, a big
buffalo. So boned out meat and everything. The meat was over 900 pounds and the best meat you could probably ever get. Calculated it all out, it ended up coming out to $5.03 a pound.
So, All right, I stand corrected, Dave. I never wanted to do the math because I always figured that it was a lot more expensive.
Yeah. It just depends. I mean, it just depends on how far you're going. I mean, there's a lot of variables involved. But in general, for one, you know what you're eating. You know, you don't know if the animal that you're getting at the store was one that was relatively sick and had to be mended a bunch and had tons of antibiotics and painkiller. That all goes into the meat.
Was right at the threshold for allowable amounts of sewage.
Exactly. You know, and here you are buying it at $6 a pound.
Yep.
So, you know, for me, it's there's a sense of gratification and sense, and it makes me feel good too when I'm pulling that meat out of the freezer and it says Desert Bighorn Sheep. And I'm
has
like,
the year, and you remember the hunt.
And
the yeah. Hunt.
And then I know that that thing wasn't, you know, injected with vaccines and everything else. I'm like,
well, let's go on that. Let's keep going on the why hunt thing. But I hear the music, so that means we got to take a quick break.
And a shot.
And a shot. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back on Nevada Backcountry.
And we are back here to talk about, continue our conversation a little bit on our food.
Talking food.
We didn't expect this to go this long, did we?
No, we didn't, man. And over the break, we're talking about some of this stuff. And so first off, everybody take a shot because you got an and we're back on Nevada Backcountry from David.
Oh.
So take a shot. But now we were talking about just some of the illogical, I will call them, takes on nutrition, exercise, all this stuff from a certain crowd out there that doesn't like hunting. So let me back up. And you were just starting to get into the why you hunt.
Yes.
I'm like you. I love to eat this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I absolutely love that. But I also, I might get some hate mail for this, but just being real. It's the whole thing. It's the pursuit. I even, you know, when you put that arrow where it's supposed to go and you know you center punch that thing, I'm not going to lie, I get some joy out of that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I don't think, what did you say? Someone once referred to you as a Neanderthal?
Yes, for being a hunter, that I'm a Neanderthal.
Look, man, I got eyes in the front of my head. I've got canine teeth. If that's what you want to label me as, fair enough. I'll own the label.
I'll take that with pride.
I'm a predator.
They were seriously bad to the bone hunters.
I agree. So for me, it's that thing like I just don't know. I don't know what I'd do with myself if I didn't hunt. And there is the very distinct possibility I am less evolved than those giving lectures up the street at UNR. And that's perfectly fine. I'm good with that. But I just don't, the whole thing, man, everything from the planning, looking at maps, to the scouting, to watching, you know, the herd dynamics and watching all this transpire while you're out there undetected during the scouting season to, killing stuff. I derive pleasure from that. As sick as that might sound, you're giving me that look. How do I water that down?
No, there's no reason. That doesn't need to be watered down at all because the look
was like.
That's
what I'm doing.
The look was like, dang straight. You were dead right. I mean.
I enjoy it all. And then the bonus on top is.
We're not made to just eat broccoli every day. Granted, I love broccoli. I love kale, spinach. I love lots of vegetables.
Yeah.
But I'm like crazy about good meat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The food thing is like the cherry on top for me. It's like, okay, I got this whole thing done. Perfect. I can feed my family. Yeah. It's healthy.
Yeah.
I know I can eat as much of it as I want without worrying about it. Yeah. So I just don't get it. Why people don't.
People that don't hunt and think it's a horrible thing or they're vegan or vegetarian or.
Right.
Think about it in this context. The folks out there who think hunting is horrible and mean and just we've evolved beyond that, hunters feel the same way about their harvest, their successful harvest, as you do when you're in your garden and you pull and pluck that gorgeous, gorgeous red tomato and you're so excited because you grew it. It's something you did with your own hands and you are now providing something that is as organic as it can possibly be to your family. That's how hunters feel when they are standing over the animal that they just harvested and processing it and putting it in the cooler and bringing it home to their families so that they can feed and eat something that you cannot get any more organic.
Absolutely.
So.
Oh, bottoms up. Take a shot. 100%.
100%.
I'm on board. No.
Do a double.
I agree with you completely. To quote somebody I respect and admire very, very much.
Thank you, Henry.
David Catalan. The movement towards this vegan, vegetarian diet thing is a relatively new experiment in the history of human beings. Killing things and eating meat has been a part of the human experience much longer than this relatively new experiment of not eating meat.
Yeah.
The whole thing, why hunt, right? Because I would sum it up basically, I don't know any better. You might as well ask a mountain lion why it hunts. Yeah. It's my place in the food chain. It's what I do.
Just why hunts, like why garden? Same concept.
So there, we've kind of wrapped up the philosophical meanderings of why hunt.
Yes.
Now, before we go too far off the rails, Dave, talk to me about your new bow.
Yes. So I have started shooting an Athens bow. Jim and Tracy Klausner. Jim originally started Elite.
Right, right.
Sold Elite and purchased Athens. And I shot them last year in Vegas at Jim's booth. And it was a great bow. I felt really good with it. This last year, I decided to switch over to Athens. It has been a very good experience for me. And now the new bow coming out that they're shipping me, the new Axis 35 has the new AccuTune cam system.
Okay.
So there's no shims in it, nothing like that. You don't have to pull the bow apart to file a shim or put a different size shim in or what have you.
So is it similar to like the Bowtech deadlock thing?
It is, but this is actually integrated into the axle itself where the Bowtech version is attached to the limbs.
Right.
This is integrated. Okay. The axle is the AccuTune system itself. So it's supposed to be a lot more secure, a lot more accurate in its tunability. I've been setting it up. It is a phenomenal shooter. I'm going to put a little bit of luck into it, but I shot my first 300 round with it, and I shot a 298 with 21 Xs, you know, for the first one. It was pretty solid. It just fits me really well. It's a beautiful draw cycle. There's no, as the cams come over, there's no, like, plunge into the valley and drop. It's a hard back wall, but it's smooth.
Is it a limb stop or a cable stop?
It's a cable.
Cable, okay.
It's a cable. It also has the adjustable let off. You can go from 60 to 90.
Whoa, percent, that's a huge
percent
range.
Let off.
Yeah, okay.
So that's really sweet. It just has so much. Like, I've been fiddle farting with it for like the last 2 weeks since I got it. This is the Athens Vista 35. Yeah, it's the 23. And then the new one that I'm getting is the Axis. It's the one that replaces the Vista.
And same 35 axle to axle?
35 axle to axle. That's my sweet spot. I love a 35 axle to axle bow. I've been tinkering with a lot of stuff. It's really easy to work on, really easy to see your differences. Like, I've been going with a longer draw, a shorter draw, the draw I usually shoot. I'm experimenting with different let-offs and combinations and, you know, just seeing where my sweet spot is.
So what do you need a bow press for to tune these things?
Very little. Almost nothing.
Just like installing a peep and taking a little. Yeah,
that's it. Just,
but that's,
you know,
it?
And I don't know of a bow system yet that you can install a peep without having to take tension off those strings.
Right.
So, yeah. So you got to bow press it to slap the peep on. Other than that, I mean.
Well, I will tell you, shooting next to you, and you, for a long time, you were an Elite guy. You shot Elite bows.
Yep.
You've made the switch to Athens. Here's one thing I've noticed. Man, you always have the quietest bow on the line, Dave. And you told me one time that's because you tune the bejesus out of them.
I do.
Yes.
I do.
I will tell you that Athens is pretty dang quiet, too.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe that's that coming into target archery from a hunting background.
Yeah.
I appreciate a quiet bow.
Or that, or you've been shooting next to a Hoyt or a Matthews.
Yeah, probably.
Both fantastic bows.
Just loud.
They're loud.
Loud.
They
Yours
are loud.
Always quiet. Yeah. Always.
Yeah, I tune the daylights out of them. You know, it's this Athens, I was messing around with it by having the upper limb roll over a little quicker than the lower limb. the cam itself.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, because I was noticing I was kind of, when I'm on target, I start raising my bow a little bit, starts floating higher, and some people drop out the bottoms. And it's just, you can do it without having to, again, put it in a press and crank things down and move them and then unpress it and make sure the strings went back in line, right, and all of that stuff. I can do it right there on the line.
Yeah.
I can just get my Allen wrench and crank this a little bit, rotate it a touch, and I just made the adjustments I needed right then and there. It's a really, really, really nice bow, and I'm very excited to be shooting in Athens right now, and I'm looking forward to...
You're going to be hunting with it as well.
Yeah. I'm going to convert, once I get the new Axis, I'm going to convert Vista that I'm shooting right now into my hunting bow, and then the Axis will be my tournament bow. And then they're going to probably send me the Veil, which is their 38-inch axle-to-axle.
So that's a full-blown target
rig. But I've been shooting 35-inch for tournament. It's like I said, it's just my comfort zone. It feels really good. Well, I'll have to see. I'll shoot it. I'll see if it's going to do me well, and then go from
Make
there.
Make the decision
if I'm going to go to 38 for indoor competition.
Where do people go to see all the models?
They can go to athensarchery.com.
Yep.
Jim and Tracy, it's out of New York. Their turnaround is pretty darn quick, which is pretty awesome right now.
Let's keep going on archery stuff when we come back. Stay tuned through the break on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And we are back on Nevada Backcountry. I couldn't help myself, so everybody listening, this is a final segment. Go ahead, take a shot for that, even though it wasn't David that dropped it. It was me. Stabilizers, Dave. Let's talk stabilizers. Again, this is one of those things. I think I made fun of them for the longest time because they just looked goofy. It was an outlandish-looking deal, and it didn't make any sense to me. Quivalizers?
Yes.
That's what they're called
the Quivalizer.
It's a stabilizer and a quiver combo. I put one on my PSE, my Omen. Holy smokes, I'm shooting that thing better than I think I have.
Yeah. Is it 24 inches?
Yeah, it's a couple
24
feet.
24 inch, yeah.
And I did. So real quick, hey, shout out to Hunter Morai, acing the whole archery out there in Fallon.
Yeah.
Hunter has talked these things up. I've seen them on his bow at the shoots. I've started to see them more and more popping up, and I thought, you know what? I'm gonna take the plunge. I'm gonna try one. Man, there's something to it. And I did what Hunter does with his. I got the idea from him when he was on our show. Instead of having the arrows on the left-hand side of the riser for a right-handed shooter.
Oh, you put them on the right hand.
Put it on the right-hand side. And the reason I did it is because not just the ease of loading, where you would just pull it off and then load versus trying to come under your arm and do something goofy, it also balanced better.
Right, yeah, it's your counterbalance there.
I think that Quivalizer, if this makes its way to you.
I do want to get a Quivalizer for my new Athens Vista 35. I definitely want to try one. The big thing with stabilizers is, you know, years ago, people would put like those little itty bitty rubber, six inch stabilizers on the front for the looks. I mean, they're not doing anything.
Yeah.
There's no weight to them. It's just a rubber thing on the front so your bow has a cool look to it or something. And then a couple years ago, there was a hunting show out there. I cannot remember. Dan, can't remember his last name. He used to hunt with an actual competition front stabilizer on his bow.
No, like a 30-inch sucker?
It's like a 30-inch, you know, Torque or Easton or something stabilizer.
Yeah.
And he got so much guff for that for years on his show. He's like, I shoot best when I've got this stabilizer on there with some weight forward. I can't use the short ones.
Tree stand guy?
No, he was a spot and stalker.
No kidding.
He was a spot and stalker, and he was very successful, and I'm sure he still is. So then the Quivalizers came out, and they gained a great deal of popularity because they do create that stability in the bow.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. their downside would be has nothing to do with the archer or your shootability of the bow. The downside comes when there's weather. When you've got wind, yep. anything like that, now you've got this 24 inches sticking out of the front of your bow with basically, you know, if you got a full quiver on
like
there,
it's
like a bit
there.
Of a sail on yeah. there. And with that much forward, you know, you could have some issues where the nose of the bow is going to kind of waver out yeah. there.
So I guess I should hold off on going full hog on them
until
I shoot the wind.
Yeah, well, you know, it's going to happen no matter what. You're going to end up with a breeze, with wind. So no, don't hold off on it. Go for it. Like, take it. If you're
I'll reserve the full-throated endorsement of, yeah, these things are the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'll wait till I shoot it in the wind. And then I'll do the final, like, yeah, this is awesome, or, yeah, it's got some...
Well, on the same note, though, even when the quiver is attached to the side of your bow and you still have wind, you still have something that's catching that wind and acting
Very true.
Like a sail. Granted, when it's out in front in the nose of the bow, it's going to have a greater effect on the bow than having it attached to the bow and closer to you.
Yeah,
you'll be able
yeah.
to kind of control it a little bit better. So,
well, what do you shoot for a hunting stabilizer setup?
I have a 14-inch doinker.
Doinker. It's
a stabilizer. Okay. They're called doinkers.
Like the ball thing on the end of my target stabilizer, that same
That's
company.
That's a doinker.
Yeah.
So, but mine's just one, it's cylindrical. There's no ball on it or anything like that. So I use that. It's 14-inch and it works great, but I am definitely very interested in picking up a quibblizer at Hunting House. I'm going to pick one up and I'm going to put it on the Vista. Because I do love the concept. I also hunt with a small back bar.
Oh, you do have a back bar on your thing.
I do have a small back bar. It is a 10-inch back bar.
So Conquest picked it up at Hunting House. I was running there. I think it's a 15-inch and a 10-inch or something. Front bar, back bar.
Front bar, 15, 10-inch back bar?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. It feels good to me. Again, it's all up to personal preference.
Right.
I've hunted with people that have no stabilizers on their bow. They just like it.
Just
like,
no.
Boom, just right there. And then on the newer bows, you have an upper hole and a lower hole that's way down near like
almost on, by the axle.
Right.
Or
limb
pocket.
Right on the limb pocket.
Yeah.
So on a lot of the new bows, like the Athens, there's one way down low. And that's where I place my back bar.
Right.
Because you want that one weight to be low.
I've heard as far away from your hand as possible.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, in the earlier bows, you only had the one hole, which was where you put the main stabilizer. Then you had a kicker come out. And then that was your back bar,
right.
And it was like right next to you, which, I mean, worked great as well. But so, and then in competition, as we shoot with anywhere from a 27-inch all the way out to a 33-inch front bar,
right?
And you can have a 15-inch back bar, or you can have a splitter, and you can have two back bars.
Yeah.
You know, which I have on my Olympic Recurve. I've got two 15-inch bars with a 3-inch extender.
Okay.
For my two back bars, and then a 33-inch front with weights on all of them. And then the weights all come into play where, again, that's all personal preference, how much weight you put on the front bar compared to the back bar. Is the back bar out? Is the back bar in? I like running more weight on the front.
Most people run more weight on the back bar.
Correct.
Less weight on the front bar.
Yeah.
You do the exact opposite.
Yes, because I am an odd duck. That has always been the case. I like it when the bow goes off for me, when the release occurs, I like my bow to move forward and I like the nose to drop.
Okay.
But that comes down to if you ever watch an Olympic recurve shooter.
That's how the bow falls.
And that's how the bow falls. Once the release occurs, the bow swings forward. I like that to happen with my compound too. So I put a little bit more weight up front. Like right now I'm running 8 ounces up front.
Okay.
And I'm running 5 ounces in the back.
30 and 15?
My front stabilizer is 33. My back is 15.
And you run 10 degree down mount.
Yeah, 10 degree down mount. Okay. You need to tune those stabilizers to you and your shot. So you put your front stabilizer on, that one points straight out or 10 degrees out, down and straight out. So that one's like set.
Right.
The one that you need to be concerned about is your back bar.
We went through this last night with mine.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of folks will draw the bow and their bubbles off, so then they torque themselves. They use their own body posture and hand to rotate that bow so the bubbles set. If you can, have somebody behind you. You draw the bow, set yourself to anchor, get yourself into your shot with your eyes closed. Then you let this other person look at your bubble and determine if it's dead center or if you need to move that back bar in or out.
Yeah, and when you say in or out, you're talking
like
about
bringing it closer to
toward
the limbs.
Bow or away from the
bow.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But you got to be careful with bringing it into the bow. So I did this recently, and I moved it too close to the bow because I didn't have anyone with me. And I was like, okay, my bubble's a little funky. I need to move it closer. So I moved it closer, and then I went and drew my bow, and the limb hit.
Oh, it hit okay.
Because I moved it too
the
close.
The limbs flexed as the, and
as,
knocked
as
on
they
the weight.
Flows and oh. they hit the stab.
All right, Dave, man, tomorrow is 2024.
Nuts. Another month has absolutely screamed by. You know why? It's because we want hunting.
No.
We want big game season to start up again.
Oh, man, I know.
I know. We're still chasing birds.
Yeah. You know, at some point here, it is going to switch on at Pyramid.
Yes.
So we need to get out and do that. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in, spending New Year's Eve with us.
Yes.
Hopefully, at this point, you're 7 or 8 shots deep.
Yes. And remember, Uber, Lyft.
Bingo.
Get yourself home safe this evening if you're out and about or when you do go out and about. And also, not only yourself, but the people around you. If you see somebody who is pretty torqued and you know them, maybe help them out.
Give them a ride.
Give them a ride.
Don't drink and drive.
That's right.
Yeah, Happy New Year.